former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
I said it yesterday, I'll say it again. Summer vacation is over. We have eight NFL teams with rookies reporting today. Plus, while most vets arrive next week, a handful of teams will be full go in just a matter of days. Also in college football, media days roll on. The SEC day two of four coming at you from Dallas. And the home run derby last night was interesting is a good word. We'll get into that in a moment. Alongside Will Hill, who's in for Michael Lombardi today, I'm Stormy Bonantoni. Will Hill, of course, host of the Should Have Bet More podcast, also does a great job with the Bear Bets podcast. Chris Felica, by the way, your teammate there with Fox Sports, he's going to be joining us later on in hour two. I will try not to be too much of a third wheel in that conversation. We're also going to have Jared Smith join us a little bit later as well. But Will, how are we doing today? So, I mean, rough day for the show, for the home run derby bets. You, me, producer Elliot, we all be struggling last night. Not as much as the national anthem singer, but struggling nonetheless.
Stupid event. Never liked it anyway. Now, it was actually it was exciting. I was complaining about it on Twitter in the beginning because if you need more than like a few sentences to explain your rules, it's probably too complicated. Yeah. With, hey, they have this many outs, but they have a clock and then you earn a bonus. It's like, I was watching my kids. My kids loved it. They're asking me what the rules are. I couldn't explain it to them. I didn't really understand it. But the ending, that's as good as it gets with Bohm, who closed 33-1 at Circa, was the longest shot on the board. 33-1 for a home run derby is a hell of a long shot. He was like a little less than even money towards the semifinals because it looked like he was headed towards the finals. Then Hernandez has a great comeback where they go to the playoff. Hernandez wins. And then the final was so dramatic where it looks like Witt's dead in the water. He has this dramatic comeback where he's one homer away from tying it. And it hits the wall where if, hey, he clears the wall there, he's got one more swing to win it. Or he could win it in the playoff. Witt's probably going to win if that ball clears. So about as dramatic as it gets. Yeah. That's about, in terms of like the actual competition, that's probably the best one I remember. I always think, you know, it adds a little more to the home run derby when you have like an iconic ballpark like Fenway or Yankee Stadium, or, you know, years ago they played in Baltimore where there was the warehouse in right field where you have a little bit of like a landmark, a target to hit. That makes it cool. But last night, in terms of competitive, that's about as good as a home run derby gets. Just wild finishes. Hernandez 10-1. I know Gil Alexander had it, so congrats to him. That was a nice ticket. I think Hernandez to beat Witt in the finals paid like 70-1. So, and again, Bohm with 33-1 almost got at least to the final. So that's an event where, hey, you take some long shots, you hope for the best. Ours didn't get home, but it was a fun event to watch. Just a little too complicated with the rules, but other than that, it was really fun. I was shocked. Did you hear this? The Dodger had never won the home run derby before. You figure with all the great players in the storied history that somebody at some point had won one for the Dodgers. So I was surprised to hear that. Yeah. It was fun.
Teoscar Hernandez making history for the Dodgers. So did not expect that either. The final tally, by the way, he won with 14 homers to 13 in that final round. And to your point about Bobby Witt's last shot, too, to tie. So close to going in the bullpen. Like, just right there. So at the end, absolutely, the intrigue was there, the fun, the excitement, the competitiveness of the final. But after I was hyping it up yesterday about how much I love the home run derby, it was very slow starting for me. And the rules, to your point, made it a little bit of a drag. It went on forever. And I was just like, okay, I hyped this up much for our audience yesterday. What is happening? So I'm glad that it finished strong. Absolutely. You mentioned 10-1, as high as 11-1. I saw at DraftKings. But what's funny about the Hernandez win from a betting standpoint, he was the least bet of all of the participants. 4% of the handle, 5% of the bets at DraftKings. Meanwhile, the favorite at +320, Pete Alonso, 33% of handle, 27% of bets. He doesn't even make it out of the first round as a two-time champ. And I was texting you guys in our, I know you talk about the Bear Bets gambling group chat. We had our little Lombardi line gambling group chat going last night. It's like, what the hell happened to Pete Alonso? This is the thing he prepares for. He does specific drills and stuff just to get set for the home run derby, and he's out early.
Yeah, that's why, I mean, taking a favorite, taking the short shot in advance, there's just so much randomness where, I mean, it's really hard to handicap. We have content to film. We are trying to win bets on it, and we actually bet our own money. So it's not like we're just talking just to talk. But I mean, there's a lot of randomness. It's bad. We're betting on batting practice, and there's, you know, moving parts with the rules. And a lot of it comes down to something that's hard to handicap. The pitcher is the pitcher setting him up with nice spots. I think it was Garcia who was just getting a lot of balls in, and you know, there was weird spin on it. You want that nice. You want like a perfect mix of some velocity. You want it too soft. You wanted to pitch a spot in your zone where you can drive it. So there's a lot of moving parts. That's why you know, I just thought maybe take a shot at some longer odds. And if you had Bohm at 33-1, which is a crazy number, you were almost in the final and at least in a position to hedge. So fun event, like you said, very long. I mean, 3 hours of home runs. It's a lot. It's a long thing. If you're going in and out of it, it's one thing. It's very hard to just sit there for 3 hours and straight.
Yeah.
3 hours straight and watch home runs. And you've noticed, and as a broadcaster, I'm sure you noticed this, the broadcasters eventually, very quickly, I would say, run out of ways to describe a home run. Hey, that ball's gone. Home run, another home run. I mean, if you combine all the home runs hit throughout the night.
That one. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's probably what, like a 500 homers hit. Like, it does get a little bit repetitive.
Well, I have to ask the question because I feel like we have buried the lead here of the true event of the Home Run Derby. That national anthem, worse or better than Fergie's? Because I feel like that's what we're putting it up against as far as national anthem renditions go. I think it might be worse.
Is that recency bias? I'll have to go back and listen to Fergie, and I'll have to go back to listen to one again. How about this? They both win. They can split it. They're both winners. That was awful.
I just kept thinking, I know that the national anthem is a hard song to sing, but it's your singing is your job. You are a four-time Grammy nominated, whatever. And you could tell early on that it wasn't going to be her day. And she still just kept stretching for the high notes and doing the runs and doing the whatever. And I was, everyone in the entire building, everyone at home watching was just, please stop. She's turned her comments off on Instagram, probably rightfully so. But she does have a single out coming out later on this month. So maybe she'll get more eyeballs than she would have otherwise because people are very interested in this.
Whitney Houston, she is not.
True that. We'll get into this more in detail when Jared Smith joins us later on in the program, but any early thoughts that you just want to give out here quickly on the All-Star game that is coming up later on tonight, starting pitchers Paul Skenes in the National League and Corbin Burnes in the AL side of things?
Let me check the line here. We are down to 7 as a total. Okay. I talked about the under yesterday. I talk about it every year in all these shows. It plays well for the pitchers. These guys are used to throwing 6 or 7 innings. They can come in for one inning, throw as hard as they can. And there's an unfamiliarity aspect where, hey, if you're on the Braves or the Phillies or the Mets, you don't see Tarik Skubal from the Tigers very often. That favors the pitcher. It's hard to pick up the spin, hard to pick up the ball. So this is a pitching dominated game. Usually the last 3 or 4 have gone under, and I think 13 out of the last 16 have stayed under 8, and this opened at 8. You could have bet this at 8 on Sunday night. Devin's different because 7 at 3-3. And I meant to look. I got to go look during the break. Maybe somebody can look it up while we're talking. What happens if it's tied after 9? I don't think they play extra innings anymore. I don't know if they go to a home run derby for a tiebreaker, and if that counts as, will they count it as like a 3-3 final and sort of like soccer where somebody wins on penalty kicks? Yeah. That's something to take into account because with a low total, 3-3 going into extras is certainly a possibility. At 7, I don't know if I can recommend it. I think you can bet under 4 for the first 5. Maybe that's a better bet if you find a 7.5 juice, then you do have alternate lines here. 7's just cutting it close. As much as pitching dominates this game, 7's much different than 8. You're asking, I mean, here's the other thing with pitchers coming in and out. All it takes is one guy not to have it and give up 3 or 4 runs. At 7, it's hard to stay under. So it's a lean towards the under. At 7, I can't recommend it as much as 7.5 and 8. I would shop around or just play the first 5. What's fun, and I'll see if I can peer pressure you into betting this. Yeah. MVP's fun because you get some really good players, 50-1, 70-1, 80-1. Look, they're all stars. And if you think it's going to be close, low scoring, the guys that play late in the game are coming off the bench. Those are the guys with the long numbers. I talked about it yesterday. Elias Diaz last year, 8th inning, hits a 2-run homer to win it. He was 200-1. He was the longest shot on the board. So if you get a game that's 2-2 in the 8th and somebody comes in and gets a game-winning hit, that guy's probably going to be the MVP. I wouldn't bet on any pitchers. I know we'll talk about Skenes. Mariano won it when he was retiring. That game was played in New York. That was 2013. Bieber won it when the game was in Cleveland. Other than that, pitchers don't really win this award. You're only pitching one inning. How are you going to be the MVP? It's very tough. So that being said, the game's in Texas. Corey Seager at 50-1 in some books. He's coming off the bench. If he gets a hit late, why not? He's won 2 World Series MVPs. He's won an NLCS MVP. All of them happened in Texas. I guess last year they won in Arizona, but I remember he was on the Dodgers the year they played in Texas because it was the bubble, and those all happened. So look, he's got a knack for the moment. He's got a history in this ballpark. At 50-1, Seager's not one that's bad, but it's a situation where long shots are alive here.
Sure. And to your point about pitchers, I'm sure sportsbooks would be very happy if Paul Skenes ultimately did not win. According to one sports trader per John Ewing on Twitter, the one thing I know for certain is that we'll be cheering against Paul Skenes to win All-Star MVP. He's our biggest liability by a decent margin. Again, we'll talk more about this a little later. Last minute here.
How would he win though? Like how would he win? He's going to get a 1-2-3 first and they're going to give him the MVP. That seems like you're throwing money away. I guess anybody can win, but that seems like a stretch.
Never mind. We don't have time for it. We'll do it a little bit later, though. There is some interesting sound.
That's a tease.
There is some interesting sound that came through from SEC Media Days that I do want to get to. Some good stuff from Brian Kelly, some good stuff from Lane Kiffin. We do have Kirby Smart and Carson Beck who are going to be on the podium talking to media today, so probably get some more sound tomorrow. A little bit later on, in addition to the SEC talk, we'll do a little Big 12 version of the Gridiron Goldilocks that we did yesterday, which will be a lot of fun. Also, we just got some semi-breaking news that is making me a little bit depressed, but I want to get clarification on that and a number of headlines in the next block as well with news or noise. But real quickly, just to wrap up our MLB conversation, there are some Paul Skeens specials available on DraftKings as well, if that's of interest to anybody. To record 2+ strikeouts is a +135 price, 3+ Ks, 5-1. There's also a ton of, just for all of the players on the board in the American League and National League, anytime home runs, hits, first hit, you can do a ton of stuff within the innings as well. So I think that's good that from a betting perspective, sportsbooks are giving us some options for the game.
Some options. There's not a lot to bet, so give us the options. I talked to Adnan Virk, who works for MLB Network. He was on my podcast. He said he talked to the NL manager, Lavolo. 25 pitches for Skeens. They think one inning, but I don't know. If you have a quick first inning, would they give him a second? That's the question. 3+ Ks is 5-1. Maybe it's worth a bet.
Apparently he will not, at least according to the coach on the podium yesterday. He was asked specifically, can you see Skeens playing, if he has a quick first inning, playing in the second? And he said no. So there is that. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line. News or noise coming up next. Will one of my favorite wide receivers still be on my team?
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Get ready to win big this NFL season with a VSiN Pro subscription. If you sign up on our football special before the end of July, you'll get full VSiN Pro access from now through the Super Bowl on our early bird discount of $175. That saves you nearly 50% of the usual monthly price. With VSiN Pro, you'll gain access to daily best bets, exclusive betting splits data, proven betting systems and analysis from professional handicappers, 24/7 video content, and our special edition betting guides, like our new NFL betting guide packed with detailed team, division, and conference analysis, plus season win totals, futures, props, awards, bets, and so much more. Our expert insights and in-depth coverage will keep you informed and help you make smarter bets throughout the season. Don't wait. Sign up before the end of July and get full VSiN Pro access through the Super Bowl with our early bird discount, $175. You can sign up at vsin.com/subscribe. That's VSIN.com/subscribe.
Is it news?
Corleone is a man who insists on hearing bad news immediately.
Or just noise?
Are you going to act like this is news?
Just noise.
Let's separate the impactful from the insignificant with one simple question. News or noise?
Let's dive right in here, Will, because before the break, I said, hopefully one of my favorite receivers will still be on my favorite team at some point. According to NFL Network's Mike Garofolo, Brandon Ayuk has officially requested a trade from the San Francisco 49ers after an offseason of unsuccessful attempts to reach an extension. They had a recent meeting that was publicized with the front office, but nothing has come from it. News or noise, Ayuk requesting a trade.
I'll go news. He's one of the best players on one of the best teams, and we've seen this. If you're a 49er fan, you can at least say, hey, we've seen this before. A lot of these guys request trades, and you can just say it's a negotiating tactic to get more money. Maybe it is, but the big picture for the 49ers, these windows don't last forever. Eventually, you're going to have to pay Purdy, and they've got a lot of good players, and you see this in all these leagues, but see it in the NBA now. Eventually, it kind of backfires when you have all these players. You can't pay everybody. And you look at Bosa and Kittle, Debo Samuel, Ayuk, Purdy. You got a lot of elite, Lombardi always calls blue chip players. Mm-hmm. It's hard to pay everybody. Maybe Ayuk's the odd guy out. Maybe they actually do accommodate him. A team like the Steelers could use a receiver. A lot of teams could use a receiver. And we've seen this recent trend where, hey, I have a young quarterback. I'm one of these teams like Washington or some of these other teams with a young quarterback. I want to get him a toy. I want to get Caleb Williams a Dunze. I want to get, you know, Tua with Tyreek Hill and Waddle. So he obviously have a market. I do think it's newsworthy because I think big picture wise, I'm not sure that eventually you're going to have to just choose between, hey, we can't pay all these guys. It just doesn't work.
I think this is something a lot of us probably saw coming. It doesn't mean anything's going to happen. And I think most recently when we were talking about T. Higgins, who's been franchise tagged and his initial requests early on, Michael was saying, okay, you can request a trade all you want, but at the end of the day, you're still under contract and leadership is going to do what they want from that standpoint. Is he going to pull Le'Veon Bell and sit out an entire season? I highly, highly doubt it. So request the trade. It's news, but we'll see if he ends up on the field. I think that he plays this year in full, and then next year the 49ers decide whether or not it's Deebo or Ayuk ultimately that they keep. And from most things that I've heard, it's that they would prefer to keep Ayuk if they can. We shall see. Let's keep
remember they drafted a receiver first round too, so maybe they figure, hey, we saw this move coming, we're gonna be one step ahead, and we got his replacement set up.
Moving along here, NFL insider Diana Russini dropped the first edition of her new podcast, Scoop City with The Athletic. And when co-host and longtime NFL vet Chase Daniel asked about the Jets, naturally, the unexcused absence thing with Aaron Rodgers came up. Russini's answer caught my attention. Is it news or noise, though? Take a listen.
Aaron Rodgers told the New York Jets he was going to Egypt months ago. They knew this. So the fact that it wasn't worked out just seems really strange to me. It's their decision, obviously. And I was told that Aaron was told from the organization that it was Robert Saleh's decision to do that because he wanted to show everybody that he's not the GM.
So what was Rodgers' reaction? I mean, so they literally talked about it. And then Robert Saleh decided on his own doing that he's going to come out and make it an even bigger distraction.
So he went back to Saleh. Rodgers was like, well, what the hell? Like, why would you not say it's excused?
So news or noise, Will, Saleh's unexcused absence was to show everybody Rodgers isn't the GM.
I have a headache. I can't keep up with this Rodgers stuff, whether it's coming back late last year or, you know, political stuff or retreat. I just let me know when the season starts. I'm going to say it's noise. I can't get, I'm high on them. I'm high on the team. We talked about it yesterday, but this stuff, it just goes one ear out the other. Let me know when you're playing football. The problem is Rodgers is a great football player. They traded for him to play football. They've gotten everything except the football player from Rodgers. They've gotten, you know, the guy who comments on social issues. They've gotten the GM, the owner, the coach. He brings in all his lousy teammates from Green Bay, Cobb and Alan Lazard, and these guys who stink, and he brings in Hackett. They haven't gotten the football. Just play football. Just play football. This is noise. It's a lot of noise. I'm over it.
He is a +125 favorite to be the comeback player of the year. The Jets, the second shortest shot in the AFC East. Saleh, the second shortest shot to be coach of the year, which I find extraordinarily hard to believe. Let's keep it out on that side of the country, though. According to a recent report in the NBA, the newest addition to the Nova Knicks, Mikal Bridges, is likely to take the Jalen Brunson approach in signing a team-friendly deal when the time comes to negotiate an extension. News or noise?
I think it's news. I think the fact, I mean, Brunson, I haven't actually dug into how much he left on the table. Sounds like he left some legitimate
$113 million less if he would have signed next year.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't want to talk out of both sides of my mouth because sometimes these guys, hey, you made plenty of money. If you're LeBron, why do you need every last dollar? Take a little less and field the contender. $113, that's more than a little bit of money. That's a lot of money to leave on the table. But the fact that these guys are willing to do it, make the team better, they have a lot of people to pay with Ananobi, Brunson, Bridges. They've got a very deep team. It's not a prototypical contender where it's just two or three stars. So I do think it's newsworthy.
No question about it. The Knicks, +950, fifth on the odds board for an NBA title this coming year. When Browns running back Nick Chubb spoke to reporters earlier last month around mandatory minicamp, he didn't have a very clear timeline about the recovery from his ACL, when he would be back. But sometimes video speaks 1,000 words. I'm not sure if we have the clip. Yes, we do. Nick Chubb in the weight room, squatting around 585 pounds. This is just 8 months post-op. Naturally, this has fans in Cleveland fired up for his return. Is it news or noise?
It's noise. I mean, that's obviously extremely impressive, but all these guys can lift a lot of weight. Can you cut the same? Can you run the same? That was a gruesome, devastating injury. The fact that we're ever going to see him be 100% Nick Chubb again, I can't rule it out, but I think that's the underdog in the terms of the scenarios, just because, man, it's a young man's game to begin with. And once you have an injury like that, I just have to see it before I believe it. So I think it's noise.
Oregon quarterback Dylan Gabriel is now the favorite to win the Heisman Trophy at most books, moving past Georgia's Carson Beck and Texas's Quinn Ewers in what's pretty rare July odds movement. Beck and Ewers have been favorite since February. Gabriel was as long as 14-1, but since the 4th of July holiday, steadily bet up to around 8-1-ish. Is the Gabriel respect in the market news or noise?
I think it's noise. I think it's just one bet. It was somebody who's with some influence in the market who I think has some customers, some subscribers, and he released it as a play. Other people bet it. It was probably a big bet on his end, and then people tailed it. So it's probably just one person's opinion, someone who's very respected in their opinion. So take it for what it's worth. But if you're talking about like betting it at current number where it's single digit odds, I mean, he's certainly a contender. He's certainly rightfully one of the favorites. It's just, you know, there's so many guys that can win it. There's so many things that can go wrong. It's not enough bang for your buck for my money, but he'll certainly be in the mix here.
Yeah, Oregon, by the way, one of just seven teams in college football that's an odds-on number to make the college football playoff. They're among the three short shots to win a national title this year. Stick with green. Jaylen Brown made a trip out to Vegas to watch the Celtics in summer league action. Popped up courtside in the game where the cameras caught him saying to his WNBA player girlfriend, Kaiser Gondrazic, forgive me on the pronunciation, says, I don't think Bronny's a pro. She responds, I think he'll be on the G League team for sure. NBA Finals MVP saying Bronny's not a pro. News or noise?
Yeah, and the sun's going to come up tomorrow. I mean, this is, it's so obvious, yes, but I think it's news. I'm sure he figured, hey, the camera's not on me. I could just speak candidly. Usually these guys, when they talk about anything, they're so guarded. It's just, you've interviewed people. It's different when you're talking to the media. He didn't really realize there was a camera on him and they could read his lips. I'm assuming that is what he said. It does look like what he said. I think it's news. I think he's 100% right. I mean, if you look at how poorly Bronny's played college, now the summer league, it's really offensive that he was drafted where he was. And for then, and really the offensive part is for LeBron saying, well, he earned this. You know, he worked hard. He's not earned this. He's not a pro player. He's not an NBA player. First of all, he's got the gift of like the genes and all the training when you're LeBron's son. And even with that, he's nowhere close to an NBA player. So this whole thing is offensive. I do think it's no.
How about that timing?
It's news.
That timing, by the way, to your point about the cameras. Brown has since responded. He quote tweeted the post of that clip, said, it's a flex to have your son alongside you in the NBA. It reflects greatness on longevity. Bronny has all the tools around him to be successful.
There you go.
I look forward to watching his growth.
That's the athlete interview. That's what the athletes speak.
One more real quick. Baker Mayfield said on Barstool's Pardon My Take this week, Dave Canales will be good for Bryce Young. I don't know if it's news or noise, more agree or disagree.
I agree. I mean, if you look at his track record, he's done pretty well, whether it was Geno, whether it was Baker Mayfield. He's getting a reputation here as the quarterback whisperer. So we'll see what he does this year, but I do think it'll be good for him.
Okay, we squeezed in a little bit of college football there, news or noise, with the Dylan Gabriel talk. When we come back, we'll dive a little bit deeper into that. Big 12 Media Days is in the books after last week in Las Vegas. We're going to go through a few of the contenders in Gridiron Goldilocks coming up next. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We're rolling along here on the Lombardi Line. Will Hill in for Michael Lombardi today, holding it down. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. Let's get into a little more college football talk here. As we mentioned off the top of the show, SEC Media Days are underway. Texas and Oklahoma now in the SEC, which leaves a few question marks about the Big 12 with the defending champ gone. K-State did beat TCU for the Big 12 title game 2 years ago, went on obviously to play for a national championship. Very different team now. Baylor won in 2020. Baylor in 2021 beat Ole Miss in the Sugar Bowl that year. Oklahoma had won six straight from 2015 to 2020. But now doors open in the Big 12, and Utah coming over from the Pac-12 is actually your favorite right now and took 20 of the first place votes in the preseason media poll. They're plus 320 in the conference, plus 120 just to make the title game. And so what we're going to do here, Will, is similar to what we did yesterday with the SEC, go through a handful of the contenders in the Big 12 and see if you feel their odds are too high, too low, or just right in today's Gridiron Goldilocks. So let's start there with the Utes, who have high expectations, but for as high as the ceiling can be, win total only sitting there at 9.5. Now, it is juiced at -135 to the over, but as you look at that 9.5 in their schedule, are the odds too high, too low, or just right?
Just right. If I had to pick one, I would say it's a little too low. This is a team that just constantly overachieves. They've got a habit for overachieving. Last year was just a throwaway year. The quarterback was hurt. The roster was banged up. I think some of the guys that could have come back didn't because they say, hey, we're not in the mix. Next year is going to be the year I think they have this year circled. So I expect a big year from them. And we'll talk about this with all these Big 12 teams. There are so many. It's so wide open. It's so balanced. It's clearly the most balanced of all the major leagues where there's just so many games that could go either way, teams that could go either way. But they're solid. I think they're plus 220 to make the playoffs. I don't think that's a bad bet. I think they're favoring like 10 games. So, for me, if anything, I would go over. I would expect them to have a good year. I think the question, and this applies to a few of these teams, what are we getting out of the quarterback? He's rising the player of a couple years ago, and he's going to be really good. Did the injury take a toll on him? Defense is going to be good. They're well coached. I would lean towards the over. We'll see. They're the favorite. They're the right favorite. What's interesting to note too, not just with this conference, but with all the moving around, with all the realignment, the teams that went to the Big 12, the newcomers really struggled. And if you think about it, it makes sense because, hey, you have to adjust to a whole bunch of teams where, and I forget if it's you making that point or somebody else I was talking to, where the incumbent teams, they only have to learn like one or two new teams. But if you're the team coming in, hey, I got to learn a whole new, it's almost like learning a whole new playbook. I got to learn a whole new conference here. So these teams that are moving around struggled last year. Now everybody's moving around, it seems like, this year, but keep that in mind with the realignment.
Yeah, and I can understand that for certain circumstances. I'm just not sure that Utah specifically applies to that because they are coming from a conference that was more difficult last year, top to bottom with the talent that they played. And I think their physical brand of football that they have is going to make them a tough out in the league. And specifically, I'm buying in on all things Utah. I think all their numbers are too low. I want overs on everything. I want them to make the CFP. I want them at the very least to make the Big 12 title game, if not win it. So I'm on board on all things Utah. I think Cam Rising will be the guy. They have 15 returning starters on paper, the most complete team in the league. Their schedule, again, to go back to that too, typically over the last handful of years, they've had a top 25 in schedule difficulty. This year, they're 72, according to ESPN's FPI. So just a lot of things I feel like show up Utah if they can stay healthy, which last year you said they were not only at the quarterback competition, but decimated in a lot of positions.
My only hesitation with taking a short number is like there's like six or eight teams that I could see being at least in the conference championship game, where if there's any conference where like a 12, 15, 20 to one is going to get home or a 10 to one, this is it, where it's just so balanced. It's so wide open. Do I really want to take a 3-1? This is one where, hey, maybe if you're going to bet it, you do take Utah. What you said, they're 3-1 to win the conference. I think I saw
plus
that.
Plus 320. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe you take them plus 320 just to cover yourself, just to have that one. And then you do take a flyer. I mean, there's no rule that says you only have to bet one team, even though only one team can win it. So maybe you bet a little on Utah, figure, hey, they're at least going to be in the title game or win it. And then I'll take my shot somewhere else.
Let's look through a few more of these contenders. Kansas State, no more Will Howard, but a very young dual threat quarterback people think is extremely talented in Avery Johnson steps in at K-State. They went 9-4 last year. They're plus 380 for the Big 12 title. Win total 9.5, and this one's juiced to the under, minus 145. Too high, too low, or just right on the season win total for Kansas State at 9.5?
Too high. I don't love the defense. I think the quarterback has a high ceiling. I think he'll be able to run. And if you read some of the reports, the upside is certainly there. And I just don't know about the defense. I think a lot of these games, and we're going to say this a lot about these Big 12 teams, a lot of these games can go either way. And this is a team like Utah. They always overachieve, but a lot of times they're expected to win, 6.5, 7.5, and then they get to 8 or 9 and it's a great season. To clear this number, you got to get to 10. You got to basically be like a borderline college football playoff team. Mm-hmm. That's asking a lot. I think that's a bridge too far. I think that Big 12 title number is too short. So I like under. I think the market is overrated in this team a little bit.
All right. Now the odds start getting a little bit longer once we get to Oklahoma
State.
You agree
or disagree, by the way? I do.
I would tend to agree more than disagree, but I'm not particularly opinionated about this Kansas State team. We've seen such a small sample size of Avery Johnson. I'm not fully sure he is, but I love Chris Klieman and I feel confident that he'll do a good job. I'm just not there yet, if that makes sense. Oklahoma State is a team that I have a lot of question marks about as well, but I am very intrigued by as they worked their way into the Big 12 title game a year ago. They're one of the country's leaders in returning production, including the best running back in college football in Ollie Gordon. They have a 7th-year senior at quarterback, two really strong wide receivers, an offensive line that should be pretty stout. I know their defense struggled last year, but their win total set at just 8, too high, too low, or just right?
If anything, it's too low. Now, this is everybody's darling team. This is everybody's sleeper, and that always concerns me. And a couple of things. 10-4 is misleading. They weren't as good as that record. I think they overachieved, and I think Texas is still scoring in the Big 12 title game. They got absolutely destroyed, absolutely just housed in that title
game.
But
they got there. They got there, though.
But they got there. They overachieved last year, and they're going to bring the whole team back. Yeah. The problem is, like, how good are they on defense? Even though you're bringing – we see this a lot. Hey, they're bringing a lot of returning production. That defense wasn't that good. What are you returning? So, I look, Bowman, I think, is somewhere between your age and my age. He's like 43 years old, I think. Was closer to my age. Seventh year. So it's crazy how long these guys play. So I'm in between. Gundy, like some of these other coaches, has a habit of overachieving. I would expect him to get at least to the 8 or 9 wins range. I would lean towards the over because of those reasons. Offensive line, running back, the defense is back, even though they're not that good. I worry they're a little too trendy. People penciling them in like, hey, this is returning some really good team. This is a pretty good team returning, not a great team. Probably a 9-10 win team. They're going to be a contender. They're going to be good. Lean towards the over.
Yeah, it is -120 to the over 8 there. And to your point about the way that people have been buying in on them, to make the playoff, their odds were around 10-1 plus 950 a week or so ago, and they're already 8-1 today. Let's go to Kansas, the Jayhawks have continued to build over the last couple of seasons. Their quarterback, Jalen Daniels, was hurt in the preseason last year. He only got a handful of games in before being shut down for the rest of the year. He's back. Big 12 player of the year candidate, and Devin Neal is back. Their win total also at 8 with slight juice to the over. That number too high, too low, or just right?
Probably right. I'm so torn on this team because I love the coach. I love the program. I love the coaching staff last year, and this was a coaching staff I just never wanted to fade. It was either bet on them or pass for the most part. I thought they overachieved. I love Leopold, but the problem is they lose their play caller, Colton Ecke. He goes to Penn State. Yep. And a couple things. Daniels is always hurt in a back issue. Backs are very tricky. That's not something where, hey, I rolled my ankle, then it'll be fine. How many games are you getting him? I think this number, this bet comes down to how many games you're getting out of him, because they got good play. When he missed games, they got good play out of the backup last year. I don't know that they're going to get the same production. And here's another little wrinkle. Their campus stadium is being renovated, so they're not really playing any true home games. They're playing, I think, at Arrowhead, which is like an hour away from the stadium. Right. Some of the games are at the soccer stadium. So, I mean, you know, from being on campus, that's a big deal when you have home field advantage. When you have to drive an hour to the game, it's not going to have the same effect. If I sound like I'm talking in circles and conflicted, is because I really am. It would be a lean towards the over just because I really like the coach. The quarterback's talented. They're good on offense. But there's a lot of things. There's a lot of concerns. Home field advantage. Losing the OC, a quarterback with injury concerns.
Their schedule, looking at, though, not quite the gauntlet of some of the other teams that we see in the league, so maybe that helps their side. And to your point, too, and I don't want to go too overboard with this, but you mentioned Kotelnecki leaving for Penn State. I do like the hire that they brought in to replace him in Jeff Grimes, and I do agree that it's still a bit of a step down at the coordinator, but Grimes is really great with the offensive line, and as we talk about their quarterback and injuries, if he's able to upgrade that unit, protect the quarterback, create some, like, holes for Devin Neal to run through, I think that could be a really positive thing for this offense, and I would imagine probably a reason why Grimes got brought in. Real quickly, no, you know what? I hate this. I'm so bad at this today. We've only got about 30 seconds left before we have to take
a
timeout.
I'll go quick. One word. I'll go one word. Go. Throw it at me.
Arizona. Season under. Win total 8. Oh, really?
Under. We'll be back after this. Yeah, I love what Fish brought to the table, but losing him, I know they kept Fafita, but so many question marks around the rest of the team.
You know what? I know we have other things that we were going to talk about in D, and maybe we can still get to that, but I want to carry over that conversation a little bit more on Arizona. There's still a couple more teams that we can discuss in the Big 12. So stay with us, because I like the over. So let's break it down, Will. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you like watching and listening to VSiN, you'll love all the betting tools and content we also have available each and every day at VSiN.com. Best bets from all of our show hosts, guests, analysts, and experts. Updated betting splits for all of the events of the day. Exclusive articles, including regular columns from our own Michael Lombardi. Odds by state. Betting guides as well, including the NFL betting guide, which is out now when you become a VSiN Pro subscriber. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe today. The College Football Betting Guide, by the way, also on the way. It'll be out in short order as we continue our college football conversation. The last segment, playing a little game of Gridiron Goldilocks with the Big 12 and some of the teams that are perceived contenders in the league. We left off on the Arizona Wildcats, who you said their win total of 8, you do lean under, which that is where the juice is, minus 125 to the under, plus 105 to the over. They're a 10-1 shot in the Big 12. But I look at what this team did under Jed Fish last year, led Arizona to one of the best seasons in school history. It won 10 games before accepting the job at Washington. They beat Oklahoma in the Alamo Bowl. And everybody that Jed Fish thought that he was going to take with him over to the Huskies stayed here. I feel like Brent Brennan, who comes over after 7 years at San Jose State, inherits one of the best situations for any first-year head coach. His quarterback, Noah Fifita, sticks around. His star wide receiver in T-Mac sticks around. He made a couple great hires in Dino Babers and Dwayne Aquina on the offensive and defensive coordinator positions, both of whom, by the way, who were part of Arizona's historic 12-1 team in 1998. But I'm very, like, weirdly excited about Arizona. I like this Wildcats team, and I think Brent Brennan's got a great situation.
Yeah, I just don't know, outside of McMillan and Fifita, I just don't know about the rest of the team. This is one of my favorite teams to bet to back last year. I was betting them pretty much every week, and I don't see the same team. It's one of those unfortunate things about college sports where you have this storybook year and overachieve, and then your coach is gone, which, look, it's just part of the business. I just don't know up front. They got pushed around in the bowl game by Oklahoma. They were very fortunate to win that game. They didn't really rush the ball. They got just dominated, I thought, both offensive lines. I just don't know up front if they're going to be the same team. We'll see what they are defensively. I think getting to 9 and duplicating such a dream season, I think, is asking a lot. So I like Thunder. You and I are going head-to-head here.
Going head-to-head. Again, 10-3 last year, 10-1 Big 12 title odds, win total 8 to make the playoffs. 5-1, which is a little bit shorter than I would have anticipated, considering the odds for a few other teams here in the league. Oklahoma State, for example, at 8-1. How about UCF here? I think that as we go through this too, a lot of really good quarterback play potentially in the Big 12 as we talk about Cam Rising at the top, Noah Fifita, who we just talked about with Arizona, Avery Johnson, a young up-and-comer. But then you go to UCF as well, KJ Jefferson leading the way, the transfer from Arkansas, used to that SEC style of play, could be a big feather in the cap of this UCF team, who struggled mightily, as you can see by their record a season ago. They're also 10-1 in the Big 12. Their win total, 7.5. Minus 115 to the over, minus 105 to the under. But do you think that this number is too high, too low, or just right for UCF?
Feather in the cap. I don't think I've ever heard anyone under like 70 use that. How does feather in the cap? What kind of expression is that?
I'm an old soul.
I think you are. I love this team. I love Jefferson. Look, if you can play in the SEC, you can play in this conference. I think Malzahn's a tremendous coach. They've got some talent on defense. They've got playmakers. I think there is a ton of upside. If you're going to take a flyer, and I think you probably missed some of the better numbers. What did you say they were for the Big 12 now?
10-1.
Not that bad. That's not that bad. And that could be, you're looking at a game, they host Utah, the final game of the season. That's a tricky trip for Utah, fly across the country to play, different weather, different style. That could be a very pivotal game in terms of who goes to the conference championship game, and you get that game at home if you're UCF. I'm buying. I like the over. I think they did well in the portal. Tricky game against, they do have at Florida October 5th, and they've made they've made it clear that game is very important to them. Sure. Remember, a lot of those kids that are at Central Florida are kids that didn't get recruited by Florida that probably wanted to go there, feel like they're overlooked. So that's always an interesting spot. And we'll see what kind of shape Florida is in that game after a really tough start schedule-wise to the season. But I'm all in. I like the over. I like them to win the conference. I think they're worth the sprinkle here, worth a bet.
They're also plus 450, by the way, to make the title game. So that could be an interesting bet there as well. But at Florida, that October 5th game that you mentioned, I think that'll be a ton of fun to watch because, this is critical year, obviously, for Billy Napier. Their win total is like 4.5. They have what's considered on paper the hardest schedule in all of college football, Florida does. So that's going to be a must-win critical game for them. But for UCF, that's like their Super Bowl if they can go into the swamp and win that game. So I love it. I think that'll be a fun one to watch there in October.
Not only Florida has the toughest schedule in the country, they've got one of the tougher schedules. I heard people that do this for a living say they got one of the tougher schedules anyone's ever had. Where you can power rate them as like a top 25, top 20 team and still have a hard time getting them to 500, where people have made the case, hey, he gets to 500. He deserves coach of the year because, and look, it's always dangerous having high hopes and being optimistic, betting the over on a team where the coach is on the hot seat. That's just a weird dynamic because you don't know if it doesn't start well, what happens week three, week four, if they're 1-2, something like that. But yeah, that's definitely going to be an interesting game. I'm just looking at these games, these matchups, just getting so excited knowing it's not that far away.
I know. The countdown continues. Similar strength of schedule and results last season, similar prices across the board, it looks like, for Iowa State as well. They bring back Big 12 Offensive Freshman of the Year Rocco Beck at quarterback. Of course, the son of former NFL tight end Anthony Beck, who I got to know well over the last 2 years in spring football, head coach of the St. Louis Battlehawks. Shout out Elliot Bowman. That's his team. As we look at their numbers, they are 10-1 in the Big 12 title odds. Win total similar at 7.5. 10-1, though, to make the playoff for this team. When you look at the win total, though, specifically, too high, too low, or just right for Iowa State?
Just right. I know a lot of sharp guys are on the over. The Bear, Chris Felica, who we're going to have on in the next hour, really likes the over.
Okay.
Likes the defense, likes the quarterback. I just don't know. I always... we talked about this with some of these other coaches. When you have expectations, like he's one of these guys, Campbell's one of these guys, when he has expectations and you expect him to win, he leaves you a little empty. When you don't expect much, it's when he overachieves. So I'm on the fence. I think it's about right. I haven't used the about right button enough here. I think it's about right. And as the case with all these Big 12 teams, you could say, hey, how many games are they favored? How many games are they underdog? A lot of these, I mean, you get four or five of these games that are just true coin flips and can go either way. So it's look, we like to bet. We don't like to flip coins. I think this will be an interesting one. But Bear's going to be here in a little bit. He can make his case for him. Iowa's always a tough game. Those games are always close, low scoring. They have a bye after that. I guess I'd lean towards them going over. I'm just not as sold as everybody else.
Okay. Very much so looking at that conversation, by the way, with Chris the Bear Felica coming up in hour two. We'll also have VSiN's own Jared Smith stop by. We'll talk a little MLB All-Star with him. But just to put go ahead.
Yeah. What's your take? UCF and Iowa State. You have strong opinions or good opinions on all this stuff.
These two teams, I think, should be good enough, right? And given the schedules that they have, should be better than those season win totals. I would assume that I lean over on that. But it's tough to what we discussed at the very start of bringing up the Big 12 and the depth that this league has. Yeah. So many of these games can go either way. It's like you just got to kind of pick which horse that you think is going to ride all the way. Right. And for me, my horse is Utah and my second horse is Arizona. So that's the way I kind of see this league through the lens of those two teams. Is there any other team that we haven't talked about, though, that does catch your eye that you think could exceed expectations or you think might be a really good fade in the league either?
Colorado. I think the schedule's much tougher. I know they have talent. I know they have the upside. I just don't know how that's going to go for Deion, who against a tough schedule where, you know, his whole thing of lecturing everybody on everything and preaching all the time. Like if they're 1-2 or they're 2-3, what's that going to go like? What's that locker room going to be like? And a lot of these games, they don't have any layups in conference play. A lot of tough games, a lot of tough road games. And I thought they got really lucky with turnovers last year. Their schedule was pretty easy early. They got the TCU game, and the TCU game really reframed how everyone thought, because everyone phrased it as, oh my God, they just beat the team that went to the national championship game. TCU was nowhere near that team, as it turned out, and they got lucky with turnovers. At Nebraska, even the home game early against North Dakota State's not an easy one. At Colorado State, as opposed to home versus Colorado State, I don't know. And then you get into the conference schedule. It's just not going to be that easy. I don't know about the depth of the team. I think if they have a couple of injuries, it sounds like they're very top heavy where, hey, you got the Travis Hunters. They got this big recruit on the offensive line. They got the quarterback. But team chemistry, depth, coaching. Remember, they were terribly coached last year. Terribly coached. Not poorly coached. Terribly coached. When you go to overtime and you take the ball first, you're just wrong. Like, that's not, hey, questionable decision. Should he go for it? Should he not go for it? That's just an incorrect decision. They had a lot of penalties. So I don't think they're well coached. I worry about the chemistry.
Well, and because of all the, you know, issues that they had, they move off of Sean Lewis early in the season as offensive coordinator. Insane. And then everything fell apart after that, too. So not a great coaching decision from that standpoint. Deion, even when he was on the podium at Big 12 Media Days here at Allegiant Stadium last week, was talking about that season opener against North Dakota State. Yes, it's an FCS program, but joked his AD couldn't give him a layup to open the season because they are known as one of those FBS killers coming from the lower level and what they've been able to do. I think we're going to learn a lot about Colorado really fast with those opening four games of the season and see what happens after that. Win total for the CU Buffs sitting 5.5. It is juiced to the over at -140. There are some sixes out there as well. We are going to hit the break. When we come back, we're resetting for hour two of the Lombardi Line. Big 12 and SEC, you'll notice a theme of the day. We're going to play some sound from SEC Media Days coming up next. We'll be right back.